Before we begin this episode, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. All y'all support helps like continue this podcast. Anything from $1 to 30 really helps us out. As little as $5 gets you a video version of every episode. $10 gets you a bonus episode every week. And yeah, you just get an archive to years of content just by donating $1 every month. So head over to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link is in the description. But I want to give a special shout out to three of our patrons who are in our BFF tier, and that is Cristian Galindo, Evelyn Preciado, and Cassandra Tapia. Y'all are real ones. Yeah, let's start the show. Hello, hello, hello. I am Ruben, one of your hosts of Bitter Brown Femmes, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. And today I am being joined by Guadalupe, also known as Lupe, who is one of the folks behind account on social media called We Keep Us Safe, whose goal is to spread accurate and timely information about ICE or MIGRA activity, so that community members can feel informed and safe throughout their neighborhoods. So yeah, Guadalupe, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we always begin with a recession indicator, and that could be anything. Do you have one for us today?
I think I have a recession indicator. It's very hyper specific, but a recession indicator in my life is local politicians jumping onto the bandwagon of Migra Watch and all our activities that have been going on for almost a year without any political support. All of a sudden, their claws are in here. So
Oh,
it sounds
anyway.
like re-election. Sounds like they're trying to keep a job. Recession indicator.
Which who are some that you want to call out specifically?
Oh my God, not specifically. Clarissa Cervantes from Riverside. Hey, girl.
And for those of y'all who don't know, like Riverside, from my knowledge, like growing up in East LA, like Riverside, that county, like in the 90s, was seen like aspirational, but like has seen so much far right grift over the last few decades, and like a lot of like stealing of like sort resources from the Riverside County people, that like it's not only gone far right, but it's like it's hurt like its local economy too. Yeah.
Yeah,
Are you
I'm pretty new
along?
here to Riverside, so I'm still getting familiar and with everything in the Inland Empire. I'm also from LA,
Oh, nice.
but I was here when shit popped off. Oh, am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I was here when shit popped off. So you organize where you're at. So I activated here. So I'm still learning too. I'm like navigating a lot of things, but you got to take things with how they come.
Yeah, I want to come back eventually to, you mentioned, you help where you are or where you move to, and that's a question a lot of folks have, like, where to start? And you said that you moved and that you found a way to be connected. Yeah, what's one, like, what helped you get connected? Like, or yeah.
Yeah, I think I love to talk about this because I've always been a very active person, but I'm not a big person with groups, which is one of the reasons that it stood out to me that maybe I should come on the podcast when I was listening to you last week about people getting involved with ICE and all this other stuff and community self-defense. Especially like I remember how hard it was for me to like find spaces like people were like find your political home, find this, find that, and it's just how do I get outside like and just felt intimidated, and felt like, what do I have to contribute? So I've always just kind of tried things. I think the biggest thing for me is like an internal struggle that I had to address of like stop not being shy and not feeling like feeling scared about like meeting new people and like talking to people and maybe not knowing, like just kind of putting that fear aside because I do have a passion and like I want to like support my community. So I didn't just want to sit at home when things were happening. So it meant that I would have to put myself outside of like my comfort zone. So when I moved out here to the IE, it was a period of like just a lot of change in my life. But after Trump got elected, and even in January, there was like already like more ICE raids that we're hearing about, and That was like one of the big promises that they made. So I just kind of started on social media looking for trainings, looking for groups, because I'm like, I have to be activated. I need to find what's up. I'm completely new here. I don't know anybody. I don't know the streets. I don't know the neighborhoods. I know nothing. So I was going to every training. Where back home, like in LA, I was so picky, you know. I was like, oh, I've heard bad things about this group, I've heard bad things about that group. I don't have a choice, like I don't know anybody here, so I need to give every single group a choice, a chance, and figure out like where I'm gonna organize. And I took some of the Know Your Rights trainings, and it was the basic stuff. I mean, I've been involved with immigrant actions in the past, and way back in like 2016, I had a group of youth that like they threw their own Know Your Rights workshop for their community members, on their, on their free time. They organized that, so the information was not completely new, but it was good to start getting to know like what are the efforts in the region, like what's going on, like this nonprofit that does this, there's this nonprofit that does that. And then I found a workshop led by the founder of We Keep Us Safe. She's no longer with the page, but she is a longtime organizer, and she just had so much experience with Migra Watch. She's been doing it since the Bush era, I believe. And so, and I went to her training. I saw what she was showing, and I was like, this is so different, but this is so practical. And so it was something that I felt like, I think that I can put this into practice. I don't have to memorize the red card. I don't have to memorize all these rules of engagement. It really is just practical skills that I can put into use. So, I started organizing with that. We started doing like community patrols and organizing those. And eventually, it was June 7th when it was the day after the June 6th raid in Los Angeles, where they took the people from the clothing warehouse or factory in the fashion district. They took 40 people, and then the next day, raids started in the Inland Empire. And we used the We Keep Us Safe page. We were kind of going on live. We got some reports here in San Bernardino and Riverside, and we were showing people how to identify and where Migra would be hiding. Like, staging happens behind grocery stores, empty parking lots, this and that. And so people were saying, we heard we saw them there, and we would go and we'd be like, no, it's clear. And then other people started sending us their clears. They're like, so I checked out the Walmart, I checked out the Target, I checked out this. And we were just posting it. We're like, well, might as well like post everything that we're getting. And then we started getting things that were actually confirmed as the activity started ramping up. So then we kind of became this like spontaneous community-led rapid response network. Rapid response networks have traditionally existed through like the nonprofits, and there's a level of like gatekeeping of information that the nonprofit will keep for themselves. There's a level of just like bureaucracy and business side of it, where it's like, we're only open 8 to 5 Monday to Friday. Not everyone can volunteer, right? You got to go through their vetting process to volunteer with us. We were just saying like, ICE was here, can anyone confirm it? We were kind of just communicating the information to everybody, and we activated in partnership too with, and this is why you got to start organizing ahead of the time when before things pop off, because we had already, this was actually our second training in partnership with Unión del Barrio, which had been also, they've been on the ground supporting people and communities in giving them those trainings of community patrols and how to identify ICE and like what are their patterns. We had one pre-planned for June 8th, and we actually activated, I think, like 140 people that weekend to join this big network. Out of those people, I mean, a lot of people left. There's always like conflict, there's drama, there's all the stuff, the infighting, like people talk about, it's real. And I think that that's like another big lesson learned for me in this project is like, be project focused, be goal oriented, and keep going. Like, if this group isn't working for you, on to the next, on to the next project. I think a lot of people get discouraged, and sometimes I do personally think it's an excuse that people use, that like, oh, I don't like the drama. It's like, okay, well then go start your own group without drama. But then also when you start your own group, you'll see conflict happens. And if we want to decolonize, we want to work through things, like we have to meet conflict where it's at, and we need to talk to people, and then we need to like keep going. Like, we might not resolve it. Like, I might have a completely different idea than you about this, but it's like we still have a common goal. So we don't necessarily need to be like best friends to organize. And so
Yep.
there was success in that. I mean, now, and from that, all these individual teams across the Inland Empire came about. And so in the early months, actually for like 6 months, I was a big part of still deploying that information, because We Keep Us Safe became like this trusted source. And the fact that we did have the capacity to say like, okay, someone's on their way, we were arranging escorts, we were even just like spot checks, like somebody was like, I want to go to North Gate, and you went around, we would post it on the story, and then people would tell us like it's clear, and we'd send them all the pictures, and you know, people would offer to send in the parking lot for others. So it was like a
That's
really beautiful summer of like just community love. And like always, like all movements, the hardest thing has been sustaining that energy. And where we're at right now is that we have a bunch of teams in the Inland Empire that are now doing their own thing. They're doing really great. I'm really proud of the work that's happening in the Inland Empire, but there's still so many gaps, and things are changing really rapidly. So that was another thing that we were faced with in the beginning of like just this whole thing that we're doing, is that it was unprecedented. So all that 20 years of experience that my compañera had, out the door. Like it was completely different.
And for folks who like don't know, like they're entering this podcast, there's absolutely no idea of like rapid response networks and like the type of like notifications you're giving people. Like, how would you describe what We Keep Us Safe does?
So it
Like
has
on that.
transformed a lot from the beginning. You know, in the beginning, we were doing red, yellow, red flags.
And what
And so
is
we would
for
tell
what?
people the green was like, it's clear, no activity, like there's no one seeing anything here. Yellow is like, we've received reports, it's unconfirmed, but you know, proceed with caution. Like, we can't tell you that it's safe. This is what we know. And then the red flags were obviously like, we can confirm this, like, be careful. And of course, and that was like uninformed, because at the time we didn't know how these raids were happening. We didn't know how people were getting picked up. So it was just kind of like giving people a heads up, like they're here. And back then, I do feel like it was a lot more like CBP is now currently operating in Southern California, which was like these like cluster kidnappings, where they would just like pop up somewhere, grab you from your at the gas station, grab you just anywhere they could. It was very opportunistic. And that was like when we were really like, you know, it was like the era of the bounty hunters. This is under a year, right? We had the era of the bounty hunters. And so it was a mess, but at the same time, it was like a collective mess, where we were all gathering all the information that we had available to us, and we were putting it back out to our community members. And eventually it became organized, because there's not just me that's putting out the information, not just the patroller or the community member that saw this and submitted it to the page, and then we posted up. It was also our community members that were using the page as a resource now, watching the story religiously, telling us, I've noticed this pattern. And then I would go and throw it over to like the people that were committed to patrolling, and they'd be like, oh, and there was something to that, right? So what a rapid response network traditionally is, I mean, it's not rapid. It is just report, you know, ICE activity to these hotlines. There's usually like thresholds before they'll send a responder out. Not something that we actually engaged in. We would ask questions, of course, to make sure that we weren't sending anybody to like anywhere unsafe. If it's a hoax, you know, we would get a level of like, okay, what are you seeing? And if we had doubts, then we would put up a yellow flag on the story and then send it out to our groups and see like if anybody could check it out. And we would usually get a faster notification of what's going on from the Instagram viewers and the people we were deploying out. So what we were able to do though was get a volunteer there on time for documentation purposes. I mean, with there was this big story in Ontario where they went into the medical center. So we did not record that footage, but our responders were the first there on site before like the nonprofit even got there. And the nonprofit got there because there was a video, right, that was then being distributed. But because we were talking to the community, and they were like, they're here, they're chasing this man in the medical center. We were like, hey, anyone near this medical center? Someone was 5 minutes away. By the time they got there, of course, they were gone. but we were able to just kind of gather information of what was going on and then give that back to community, which was really important to us because a lot of the times these nonprofit networks, they get a lot of information, they confirm that it's true, and they don't necessarily report it back to community. Even if it's late, like what we were doing was definitely an impossible task of like telling people right away, like this happened within 5 minutes ago. But even when we had rough days, we would say, this happened at 2 p.m. at this intersection. The report is at 5 p.m. because that's when we were able to confirm it. But it happened, it's true, and there's an accurate representation of what is happening real time in your community. So you're not waiting for a nonprofit to have a 6 month, report back to community. I mean, I've yet to see any numbers really from the Inland Empire published anywhere other than in our community pages. And we have the information. We would probably be better able to like decimate that information if we had more hands on deck. So that's kind of what we've done with the page, and it's always been like a roller coaster and like rerouting and understanding like where we're at and meeting our community members where we're at. But it's a very like multifaceted project with a lot of actors in it besides the people that are running the page actively.
Nice. And you mentioned that like sustainability is something that you're currently dealing with. And like, how are some ways that you've been able to sustain the energy or, ebb and flow, I think, is a natural state of things. So how have you been able to deal with those ebbs and flows of membership?
I think a big part of it is being resourceful, and I talk to we talk a lot about different roles that people can play in it, and understanding, like if it's not in the will of the people to do something, it's not your responsibility to make sure it gets done. And so I think that our success in the beginning came from people's immediate reaction, where it was fear, and so people sprang into action. And then long term, as we started to understand how things are going, people started to lose that fear and don't feel that pressure to continue to engage at the same level, right? And there's always excuses, it's drama, it's disorganized, it's this. But something that I think I really want to say is that the people that have sustained is the people that have a lot to lose. And so it's unfortunate the level of this labor that goes on the people that maybe we should be protecting the most and keeping the safest and taking care of. They're the ones making sure that they're taking care of the next person. They're like, I know what could happen to my family. I don't want it to happen to my family, and I don't want it happening to the next. And if I can protect myself and others, like I'm gonna do what I need to do. So that's the unfortunate part. I do think that the sustained energy and the sustained level of participation in this longer term thing is people that are more directly impacted above all else.
Yeah, that I think that directly connects with like the fear that you mentioned earlier, how fear galvanizes people. Do you feel like with the, recent murders of American citizens such as Keith Porter and Renee Good, do you think that fear is coming back into people as they realize that like they can also be a target? Have you seen that tangible uptick in energy around that in your corner?
I honestly feel like not enough. I think that there's spoken outrage, and then there's outrage that leads to action. And we haven't seen much of an uptick in like people being like, I want to get involved, or like this is in, it's just it is a lot of I feel like we get a lot of lip service, but there's not a lot of actual like people willing to commit. And I think for me, like just observing, it's like nobody wants to give up like a level of comfort, and to do what we're doing, it is uncomfortable. It is a sacrifice. It is a disruption of our day-to-day lives. Like we don't get to have, like, I don't have a regular daily routine. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen when I wake up in the morning. I might have to run to do a patrol. I might have to get a call from somebody that's like, I see ICE right now. Can you guys get someone here? And I'm on the phone with them trying to verify it, and also texting people to say, like, they're right around the corner from where y'all are at, and then putting an alert out. Like, I don't know. I could be running an hour early to work and end up 30 minutes late to work because whatever happens, and I deal with it, and I, absorb the consequence. If I'm late to work, I'm late to work. If this information getting put out in a timely fashion will help somebody, then I'll be late to work. Like,
How have you been able to sustain like your own energy around this? Like how, you've mentioned like balancing daily life and being late to work, like, but you're still at it. Like, how have you been able to juggle that?
I think for me, documenting this for so long, and at alongside of like organizing for like Gaza and Palestine, it doesn't seem like it's worth it to take time off. It doesn't seem like it's an overreaction to go all in. It feels like it's only natural. I think when you receive videos of people being taken, and you know what is going to happen to them, whether it's in the detention centers or in the custody of the officers, you know, you're hearing the stories, you the people that are deported, you don't get like, it's not a easy thing. Like, even when I do take days off, like there's a level of like anxiety behind it, because it's like, I know that even if I'm not engaged in it, it's happening. But it is important to take those breaks. Like, I have, sometimes I don't, and sometimes it's what the moment calls for, right? Long-term sustainability, self-care, this and that, it's important. But we're not in a moment where I can be like, well, I'm gonna take 3 weeks off and, you know, go on vacation and completely disconnect and meditate. It's just like, I will take my rest when I can, and I will, you know, important dates for myself, I will honor those, but I'm also in the complete understanding that I'm living in a time where resistance daily is necessary, and that I can't have that expectation. I can't know that, and I can't communicate that to others outside of myself and not keep that commitment myself too. So it's just, it really, for me, it is internal. I have a strong need to like protect my own family and protect my neighbors. I just can't, like, I it's, to me, it's not an option, and I feel like a lot of us that are in it's just like, we understand like it's not an option, and we know that we're limited. We know that like one person on our team being gone, it's gonna impact like the comps for the day. It's gonna impact like what we're able to produce and the community members that we're able to protect.
And I think that also, like what you mentioned, is like, you seeing the work above yourself. I think that's something that some of the most like committed organizers I know do. And that is honestly how they like overcome conflict, because you mentioned like, that conflict and drama, people use it as an excuse to not get involved. And I completely agree with that. I myself have been a victim of that, because you mentioned at the beginning that like when you lived in LA, there were so many options that you were like super picky. And I remember being in LA and also being super picky. Like specifically like against the DSA in LA, like they were just so in controversial at the time. But eventually, and like I was avoiding them. And then eventually I was just during the quarantine when people needed stuff delivered, I was like, okay, they're the ones mass mobilizing people. Fuck it. Like, let's put that aside. Like, the project is bigger than the conflict or the drama. And that is something that, it took a while to learn, especially I think as you're a young organizer. I remember in the beginning, like, I don't like this person, I don't like that person. Like, that dictated so much of where I went or what I did. When like you're gonna disagree with people, and even like not even interpersonally, that's its own shit. Even like politically, like there are some political sects even in the left that like I don't really agree with, but I know that we trust each other to get shit done. One of my best friends is like a dedicated Marxist, and they are all about that shit, and like that doesn't always align with how I view like leftism, specifically dictated by anarchy. But we still exchanged thought when we were organizers. We organized together. We just got over that. And yeah, how have What's your experience like overcoming that like interpersonal drama to get the work done?
So, I mean, part of it is that sometimes you don't have a choice. So, in this particular moment, there hasn't been a choice for me personally, right? With this page, the way that the information has been communicated and the just the management of these alerts, especially when it was like really heavy, it was on me, like largely on me. And people came in and out in the beginning, and then there was people for there for a little bit longer. But of course, in seeing that this was going to be something longer than just like a month or two, it was like, okay, well, we need to restructure like what is really the goal of this page, because the page keeps growing and I'm not really changing what I'm doing, right? And so it's different people coming in and out, but there's a level of I don't have a choice, and then there's a level of keep your head down and keep doing what you're doing. I mean, there's a lot of finger pointing, and like a lot of people might say that like I'm the source to the drama, and it's like, and if I am, let it be. Like don't organize with me, right? It's like I can't sit here and convince you that my project or the work that I'm doing or myself is worthy. And you don't have to do that for me either. Like you gotta just keep your nose down, do your work, and focus on what you're focusing on. And that for me is it. Like I'm super willing and open to like talking about conflict. I will not beg someone to talk things out with me. If you don't want to work with me, good luck. More power to you. I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing. Just honestly, it's like finding who wants to work with you. Because yeah, like we all came together for this big project of like what we thought we wanted to do, but now in action, like what is it that you really want to do? And it's like, are you trying to force somebody else to work the way that you want to work because that's what you want, or is it because you feel like you have no other choice but to work with these people, so they need to change? Like, people don't have to change. You have to change where you're at. And so find your people. I've seen all these like a lot of like organizers throw this around, like you only need like four people really to get a project going, like four dedicated people. And I think I stand behind that. You don't need to have 100, 1,000 people in your group to achieve something. You just have to have a really small group of dedicated people. And so the team behind the page until recently was like three of us that were super active, mostly me. And then one of them is a student. She could no longer do it. And then the other one had other commitments as a family person, as like having a job. And so they were on my team, but the management of the page was still on me. And now I found some more people that are really supportive of what I'm doing. And all I had to do was ask for help, because your work will speak for itself, right? And so when you're doing a certain kind of work that's going to attract the people that want to do that work, you don't have to worry about conflict. Align. Find the people that you have affinity with, align on that, and talk things through. There's a level of trust when you respect each other's work. And so that's how I've navigated it. But honestly, it's like I don't have a choice. Like people are blowing up left and right. There's this conflict, there's that conflict, there's you're not working with these people, and you guys are too mean to the nonprofits, and you're mean to the politician, and okay.
Somebody has to
And
be mean to
what?
the
Like
politician. Like, everybody has a role. As long as nobody's harboring abusers, like
No,
we
exactly. And
like.
it's like, and we can all be working towards the same goal. We don't have to be working together. I don't have to be your best friend. You don't have to be allowed in my space. Like, you don't. I'm allowed to set boundaries, even in the movement. I'm allowed to say, like, no, I actually, you've crossed boundaries with me, and I don't want to work with you.
Yeah.
Period. I don't owe you that. An explanation. I don't owe you forgiveness. I don't owe you access to my space again. And so I just like, you gotta let it go, and you gotta focus on what's going on. And I think that right now there's just a lot going on. There's too much going on for us to sit here and talk about. There's drama, or there's conflict, or we don't agree. And it's just like, okay, but there's actions that we can all take on our own that
Yeah.
contribute to the same greater good.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in my space. I don't have to be in your space. You don't have to be in her space, their space, whoever's space that you're not getting along with. It's finding two or three people that you really vibe with, and what project are you guys going to do? What part of it are you taking on? Are you doing mutual aid? Are you doing patrols? Are you doing like Are you teaching people things? Are you doing more radical actions? Like, what are you doing? You just and don't worry about what the next person is doing, especially if you hate them or you don't like them or you're not aligned with them, then don't worry about them. Like, worry about yourself and do what you need to do. That's really what's kept me going. It's just like, okay.
And as you talk about like people like, you know, going to do their own things, like what are some like tips you have for people who want to start like community self-defense initiatives?
So I think that I would really like to elevate that there's a lot of like information already out there. So if you're interested in getting involved in any kind of like, is it if it's Migra Watch or like community self-defense, patrolling, like there's just so many things that you can do. Documenting, like we have a whole in the Inland Empire, we have a team. They're actually for the whole Southern California region, but it was just organized by an Inland Empire organizer. That all they do, they're not really able to patrol. They're not people that are able to be mobilized in that way for different reasons. They go through the Facebook groups, they go through the Instagram pages, they go through the WhatsApp groups, and they collect verified reports. They report them on iceout.org, so the People Over Papers page where they have the map, right? So then now we have all these like really accurate maps of Southern California of where ICE activity is happening, all because there's this group of women that are on every single group. And then they go and they submit it to the database that we have. They're also doing that with the Stop ICE plates. They look through every picture online that they can find of, and they take the screenshot of the plates. They take the screenshot of the cars and they upload it onto the Stop ICE tracker. And now we have a really, really accurate, like we could just tell people, put it in the tracker because we had that team of community members. They're not organizers, they're not activists. They're just people that wanted to help and started helping. Got together, found their affinity group and said, what can we do? And so they're doing their virtual organizing. So there's just a lot of things that you could do, but you have to start getting involved just on your own, doing some research. What are the community groups in your region? Do they exist? If they don't exist, do you want to partner with anyone or are you okay doing it alone? Like, what kind of trainings can you attend? I do trainings all the time. Like, I'm so deep into this and I still attend any training that I can. Because you have to learn, you have to listen, you have to, like, this is not something that with one training or one plática or one video that I make, like, you're gonna be able to do like a pro. So another thing that I think really people have to understand is that it's gonna take time and it's gonna take a little bit of failure, especially if you're starting by yourself without a group. Like if you're just trying to start your own group, it's gonna be a thing that you have to navigate. But
How do
it
you,
is.
how would you help folks like brush off failure? Like what's something you would say to them?
I think it's just learning. I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes in the process of this project that I'm in that I don't even know what it is. It's like our hands are in everything, but it's just like we're doing it, right? It is just having humility and forgiveness for yourself. It's we're in a new place of violence towards our communities. We've never really seen raids like this where, CBP picks a community in Southern California every day to go in, just grab people from their jobs, grab people from the streets. So understand that you're in a situation that doesn't have like a real like roadmap for you to follow. So yeah, like you're gonna have to redirect, and redirection is something that you should expect even when you're doing well. I mean, I would say that my organizing group were doing really well, but right now we're in conversations of like what's next. Like yes, we're doing this really well, but we're not necessarily where we need to be. So how are we gonna take what we know and kind of like anticipate what's next and be prepared for what's next and keep people focused?
Yeah.
It's a
What are
struggle. It's not gonna be easy, and I think that that's it. That's why they call it the struggle. Like it's hard, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of like struggles, like I know that there's like some interconnections between you know, the type of work, anti-ICE work that is happening in the US and that you're engaging in, and like the Palestinian resistance movements. Like how do you connect those two?
So I think the biggest connection that we can make is that if we want to resist, like within the imperial core of the United States, you need to understand like the movements outside of the United States of resistance and people that maybe even have less resources than us. and how they've gotten, creative against their oppressors. So one of the ones that I talk about a lot is Palestine, Gaza, and the West Bank, because there's just a lot of parallels from the surveillance state that we're in. The same app that like Israel uses to track Palestinian people is now being used by ICE to track immigrant communities. So there's that, right? That it's just that that portion of it, right? Then there's the fact that like American police forces train with the IDF all the time. We're seeing that now, right? So that was happening in Palestine. There's a level of violence. Now you're seeing it being enacted on protesters, like in Minnesota. And it's been happening for a long time. Organizers were talking about it like during 2020 and the Black Lives Matter movements after like George Floyd, of how that violence is already coming home. And the cop cities and all that, it's all interconnected. But if you want to look at resistance movements looking at Palestine, and one of the things that we talk a lot about in the page is the this concept of protective presence, which is used in the West Bank by settlers that are kind of like defectors, foreigners, just people that are activists that come to the West Bank to support Palestinians. And what that means is that they stand with them, literally go places where they're going to get harassed, where Palestinian people get harassed or brutalized for being by the IDF or Israelis or other settlers. And they bear witness, they put themselves in between, because they used to care if people were witnessing what they were doing. If someone was recording it, they would stop. And progressively, as the world has failed to act for Palestine, protective presence is now more of a the person that's there to protect is also more like there for solidarity, because they're also now being violent against non-Palestinian, pro-Palestinian activists that are there to support Palestinian people in action. So we see that here too. I mean, documenting the crimes of ICE has not deterred the violence. Us being there and offering that protective presence and documenting, and for the future, it doesn't necessarily deter the violence. And so that's just something that we need to like see that parallel and see how the violence is escalating. I mean, Renee Good was shot in the face, with cameras all around, with community members all around, with people that were out there to say no. She was shot in the face. So, like, that's the level of violence that we're facing. And it's very parallel to what's happening in Palestine. And if you look at what's happening in Palestine, that shit's really bad. Like, it's a genocide. Like, people are getting killed every single day, like, just murdered left and right over land, which is what we're over here. The same thing. It's over land, it's over resources, it's over our labor. Because the people, I mean, all these detention centers are a ploy to get more free prison labor, right? So it's all interconnected, and we can look at our Palestinian brothers and sisters and their resistance and their spirit and their solidarity within each other and with other movements to understand that we're fighting the same beast and we're all aligned, and we can't forget about that. And we can't forget about the harm that is abroad that is now coming home, and that we do bear some of the responsibility of what's happening to our neighbors when we fail to act for Palestine and Sudan and Congo. Like,
Yeah, some folks
chickens
might
coming home
even.
to roost.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because it's like, it's not even like the violence there is coming back here. It's like, no, the violence actually started in America. Like, because even ICE, like people compare it to like Gestapo or the IDF, but it has more in common with like slave catchers who were trying to catch people, bring them back or to slavery, and extract free labor, right? That is exactly what's happening with ICE. They would kill defectors like John Brown and so on. So it's American born and bred
Bread,
like
yeah.
violence that was then taken to Germany, taken to Israel, and is now coming back here, right? So all these things are interconnecting. And like you said, like, yeah, that was a good point you made, is that like things are escalating, that before when there was like allies to Palestinian folks, who, documentation was enough. But now they're targeting journalists all the time too. So I am thinking about like how folks have to, make their, peace with that in order to really enact change. But With all this that's happening and all you've talked about, like, what's helped you maintain hope?
I think for me, it's the people that I'm organizing with. It's seeing their spirits, even when I'm super down or when they have really hard days. It's the rage that they experience. It's just the joy that we experience together in moments where things are good, or when we gang up on the politicians or the nonprofit, or come together. There's been some awesome moments of resistance that we've had small wins that maybe don't get publicized, but that really does keep me going. That I feel like even if we lose, at least like we didn't fucking coward, like even if it's a losing battle, at least like we didn't just lay down and take it. And I think I'm a bitch that like lives off spite, and so it's like I'll spite the US government till my like last dying breath before I turn around and let some shit happen. And say I didn't know. Like I do know, and it's like my life mission to make sure that everybody else knows too. Like, listen, like if I have to watch these fucking videos, you should watch these fucking videos. And if you're okay with this world and this shit existing, then that says a lot about you. But it's also saying a lot about the people that are saying like, wow, I watched this video and now I'm like, I can't let this happen. And we did get a lot of people. Like some of our most down people right now on the ground are. Just came from the Instagram and were like, I couldn't watch this anymore. Like I'm here, I'm patrolling. Like some people just started like telling me like I'm patrolling, and then these fuckers would find fucking ICE before like the people that were organizing patrols would, just because they were like, well, I thought they might come here because there's a lot of warehouses. And so it really, you don't have to be like this special kind of person. Like I don't consider myself like an activist. I don't consider myself an organizer. I happen, to mobile. Like I don't sit at home when shit happens, and I ended up in this position. So yeah, it just gives me hope, because a lot of like also the most down people that I'm with right now are just regular people. We're not activists, we're not politicians. We never we're hoping to like gain any kind of like social, or I don't know, like any kind of credit for it. We just we saw the need, we saw the moment, and we rose to the occasion. And that's really inspiring to just see like moms, sisters, tias, gay cousins, like all of us, like just weirdos, like out here in the world, and deciding then like no, like we might not be this or that, but we're here and we're gonna resist. And that's like just really important. Like that page, and the reports that we put out, it's just so, it sounds like researched, and it's really just people coming together and saying like, this is what we're seeing, this is what happened today, and then this is the trend, and we just publish it back out to community,
Yeah,
regular ass fucking people.
it's honestly like the ancient function of like good cheese may, right? Just
100%, yeah.
so
I
yeah.
always tell them that. I'm like, I'm just really chismosa. That's what made me super qualified for this role, is that I'm nosy as hell.
Nice.
I want to know
Yeah,
everything.
if where can folks follow you again? What is the name of the
Yeah,
account?
so the Instagram page, if you're interested, I'm super down to talk more like real, like how can you get started? We could talk about that more. Just DM us on the Instagram page. We read and respond to like every single DM. So it's at we_keep_us_safe_1312. And yeah, I mean, DM us any questions. I'm super down to help you guys get started. Like I said earlier, we learned a lot, so I feel like I can help you get started. But the other thing is like, just be prepared to also learn a lot. Like I can give you all the information, and then once you're in action, you're gonna learn your own things that you're gonna have to add to it. There's not gonna be a roadmap.
That's
Like
so
I could get you
real.
started, but be ready to put in work, and we have to. Like there's no choice. It's not gonna be easy.
That's so real. All right. And with that, the last question of the day. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first? What's made you less bitter in this recently?
Oh, okay. So I have one. I thought about it really hard, but my best friend, he threw himself at Treintañera, and it was this big, beautiful, like queer fiesta that we were at, and that made me a lot less bitter, because it reminded me like the future that I would like for myself, and what I'm sacrificing all these hours and quality time with people that I love, so that could be basic living.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I wish I would have thrown myself a quinceañera.
Yeah,
But yeah, that's
genius.
us. Yeah, I mean, when I turn 45 and close to a decade, I'll do a triple quince. Yeah, what made me less bitter is just pop music, honestly. That's such a thing for me. But like, there's a new music video by Pink Panthers and Sarah Larson, who are two of the pop it girls at the moment, and it was so like just recession pop and hyper colorful, and the music was bouncy and incredible, and it reminded me of like the Britney Spears, Lady Gaga videos of yore. And so that was a lot of fun, and I've just been preaching the good word of Pink Panthers and Sarah Larson over the weekend. Yeah, and just seeing people be creative overall is always an inspiration to continue, doing any type of creative work. So that's been it for me. All right, y'all. Thank you for joining us on this podcast, and thank you to Lupe and all the work you do over at We Keep Us Safe 1312. You guys should give them a follow, especially if you're in the Riverside area and want to get involved. That's a good place to go. So thank you again for having us, for coming
Yeah,
on.
thank
I mean,
you.
all right.
Have a good
All right, everybody. See y'all. Bye.
night.
And before we head out, I want to give a shout out to our I Know Her Level patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. So Fernando Peña, Selena Portera, Miranda E, Magdalena Salcedo, Ronnie Leyva, and Bianca Garcia. Y'all are real ones, and I definitely know her. If you also want to be known, go over to patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. The link is in the description.